Hello and welcome to Undivided. I'm Brandi Cruz. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving common sense a comeback. A lot to talk about today.
We're going to talk a little bit about what happened with Donald Trump in Manhattan today. He pled not guilty. Not a surprise. So we're going to bury that a little deeper in the show since everyone and their mother is talking about Donald Trump. But on the state front, Governor Jay Inslee just had a press conference with Attorney General Bob Ferguson, and they announced the purchase of 30,000 doses of an abortion pill. And what's interesting is they'd already ordered it. I hadn't heard anything about that. So I don't know if they were trying to do it in secrecy. The 30,000 doses, which apparently is a 3-year supply of an abortion drug called mifepristone, arrived on March 31st in Washington state. And the reason that the governor said they are doing this is because there is an ongoing lawsuit against the Food and Drug Administration over use of this abortion pill. And so it sounds like the state of Washington's like, okay, before that court case ends, and maybe you can't get this pill anymore, we're going to order 30,000 doses, a 3-year supply for Washington state. And I looked up mifepristone, and apparently it's an abortion pill that you use, it induces an abortion, used up to 10 weeks of pregnancy. And it's been used in the U.S. for a long time, but Jay Inslee came out. My question is, are they going to get their money back for this? So are they going to sell it then to pharmacies and to healthcare providers if they're going to continue to use it? If the taxpayers footed the bill for 30,000 abortion pills, I would assume that they would then sell those rather than just simply distribute them. So we were monitoring that. That's an interesting topic to discuss, and we're going to have a conversation about that probably more at length tomorrow as we learn more about this purchase. But hello, Nicole. Nicole was over there. It was funny. We were on our live stream on, I was monitoring YouTube comments, and we were starting a little late, and but people were like, I wonder if Brandy's waiting on Nicole.
It wasn't me. No.
It wasn't any of us. And Nicole's the punctual one in the group.
Well, I try to be, especially for you.
I don't like late. I don't like tardiness.
You don't like late, and I know that. And so in my head, yeah, it makes me better at being on time because I'm usually cutting it very close to my deadlines.
That's all right. You're forgiven. And I'm interested in talking about, can we tell, say that John was in New York and he saw some of this craziness? So when we talk about the Trump situation later and the fact that Marjorie Taylor Greene today compared Trump to the persecution of our Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, we'll play as a soundbite from Marjorie Taylor Greene. But John Curley, the radio host in Seattle, good friends of ours. In fact, that's where Mike and I are getting married, at John Curley's place in September. He has an auction in New York.
Yes, he has an auction tonight in New York. So he went early yesterday and got up early this morning and went down there and saw some of the chaos.
I would have totally done that, too, because I would have absolutely wanted to see what a circus it is down there. But we'll discuss Trump later because we have a lot of local stories to get to. And I'm going to play a piece from our friend Jonathan Cho, who's used to be with Como TV, now works covering homelessness for the Discovery Institute for something called fixhomelessness.org. But you may have noticed the title of today's episode is Council Members Gone Wild. And we have multiple stories that will explain why the title of today's episode is Council Members Gone Wild. But we have some council members in Washington state that really think a lot of themselves. They're two very different stories. But I want to start in Burien. So if you're not familiar, Burien's a suburb of Seattle. It's in the same county, though. It's in King County. And they're dealing with a homeless issue, just like everyone around here is dealing with a homelessness issue. And I'll let Jonathan Cho's story explain kind of the ins and outs of this. And I'm going to play the whole thing because it's really good. I love the work that Jonathan Cho is doing on the ground, but it gives a lot of the context for this council member that we're going to go in on. And so there was a homeless camp in Burien, and they went in to sweep it. And essentially this council member, who you'll see featured in this story, went and told the homeless people, you know, there is a federal court ruling that says that if we don't have any place for you to go, then you don't have to move. So why don't you go over here on this city property by City Hall? And so she totally intervened in the attempt to clear these homeless individuals out of this area and just sent them up the hill to city property, where it also became an issue. So here is Jonathan Cho's story.
Burien's in recovery mode after a lengthy homeless takeover outside City Hall. I haven't observed or heard any adamant defiance.
On Friday, the men and women living in tents were ordered out after months of complaints from neighbors and business owners.
I'll be honest, I'm kind of happy with the way things are going so far.
The encampment residents were blamed for a rise in property crimes in the area, open-air drug use, and fires.
They should definitely be able to stay on public property.
Even though some neighbors advocated for the homeless to stay,
there's nowhere for them to go, you know, they're getting swept everywhere out of Seattle, so now they're coming over here.
The move seemed to be going according to plan. Outreach groups and local ministries spent weeks trying to convince people to take shelter or enter detox programs.
We've taken about two already to the church.
And a few took them up on these offers.
They got hot showers, they got food set up.
But no one was expecting this.
It's like a whack-a-mole sort of situation.
Multiple people on the ground say Burien City Council member Sydney Moore,
who's coming in and telling people to go up there,
directed some of the homeless to a plot of city land just a block away.
They didn't go there of their own volition.
Right next to a family dental practice in the heart of Burien's business district.
We are not going to let this happen.
Over the weekend, I reached out to Moore numerous times for comment, but still no response. However, she did put out a statement in the B-Town blog, saying all she did was notify the homeless of their rights to sleep outdoors if there's no shelter space available in the city, citing the groundbreaking Supreme Court case Martin versus Boise. Moore went on to say in part, I acted on my own accord as a concerned individual and a leader tasked with ensuring the safety of all people in our city.
I never relied on anybody in the past 7 years.
And that's exactly why Alex Guillen says he moved all his belongings and set up right on the lawn at the corner of Southwest 152nd Street and 6th Avenue, just a block away from City Hall.
And now our livelihoods, our neighborhood, and our city is at risk.
Attorney John Cannon is preparing to file a class action lawsuit against the city for this mess and says Moore should be recalled for failing to perform her duty as a council member.
If they told the citizens that they're going to get rid of the homeless camp, and they did, but then they moved it a block away, that would seem to be misfeasance.
And we actually had a tent out here.
Councilmember Stephanie Morris says what's happening now is undermining the spirit of the city's anti-camping laws in public parks.
How long can the homeless stay there now?
Right now, unless someone steps up and is able to lease it from the city, they can stay there indefinitely.
There's not a lot of options for them.
Scott Law owns the electric train shop across the street from this new encampment.
I don't know what else alternatives I have.
And says he wants to give it a chance before railroading the idea.
Well, I'm sympathetic to them. They need to live somewhere.
So that is our friend Jonathan Cho's reporting with the Discovery Institute. You can watch his stuff at fixhomelessness.org. It's when I'll always be like, Jonathan, can I play your stuff? He's like, you don't even have to ask, just play it. And he's doing awesome work. But you see, you have this council member who decides to take it. And any person who serves an elected office, they also have a duty to the citizenry as a whole. And for her to go in because of her ideology, as they are attempting to move these homeless people out of the area, because they've gone in. They had offered services. There had been outreach done. And we know, and this happens in Seattle and all over, that there are a lot of people who are dealing with substance abuse issues, mental health issues, and you might offer them help, and they might say no. And so they're going in and try to move these people. And she says, oh, just go over here. Because if you're not familiar, there was this Supreme Court ruling, and I know Jonathan talked about it, not a Supreme Court, but it happened in a federal court in Idaho, where basically they said that you cannot move someone, like you can't have a no sit, no lie ordinance, which is something where you say you can't sleep on the sidewalk. You can't do that unless you have shelter to offer them. But that's my point, is there has been outreach workers trying to get these people help. And if they say no, do you just allow them to stay in perpetuity? Because if you sweep them, then they're just going to move somewhere else. And so it's ridiculous. And so this councilwoman, council member that Jonathan Cho talked about, their name is Sydney Moore. So last night, there was a council meeting in Burien where people showed up and they were just livid. And I just go Burien, because I love when people stand up for themselves. They packed this. They did remote testimony. And before some of these comments from the public, council member Sydney Moore was, I guess, defending herself. Not really, though. But saying, essentially, now she's responsible for all these homeless people being on city property. And now she's berating her fellow council members, saying that they need to provide them on-site services like a porta potty. Here's what she said.
We've known for a long time that Martin v. Boise is in place, and that if we shuffle them off the the City Hall property because it's under a condo association agreement. The only place left for these people to go is public property. We knew that. It's been plain as day. So I think that we do need to acknowledge the fact that we decided to remove people with no plan, knowing that they were going to just disperse into our city and fall who knows where. All that said, I want to go back to the question I asked previously, which is that can we at the very least put a porta potty out there so people who are stuck living outside with no restroom are not using the doorsteps of our businesses? Can we put a porta potty out there so people are not using the doorsteps of our businesses because they have nowhere else to go? And I just want to,
I'm sorry, that has been an issue. I know people are upset, but let's.
Do we want them to use a sanitary facility, or do we want them left with nowhere to go?
Now, look, I don't disagree with some of her underlying arguments there. The fact that would I rather have someone defecating in the storefront of a business, or would I rather have a porta potty, even though I think that porta potty will probably be used to facilitate illegal activity like drug use and other things that I won't get into detail on. But the sanctimony, can you imagine trying to run a city, being on a city council, and that's how your fellow council member speaks to you every day? And there was this awesome citizen. Do we just have their first name? Is it just Shay? We don't know their last name.
Oh, it was probably listed somewhere.
Okay, because I just want to give Shay and Birian a shout out for not only taking the time to testify, but for calling council member Sydney Moore out on her absolute childish behavior.
Sydney Moore and Charles Schaefer acted without the consensus of council or the planning commission and without authority. According to her letter in the B-Town blog, they acted as private citizens. I'm also a private citizen. And just imagine the consequences if any of the fed up citizens of the city had chosen to do the same without permission, without authority, or without consensus. What kind of repercussions would we be facing? I am demanding that Mr. Schaefer be removed from the Planning Commission because of this abuse of power. And at the very least, Ms. Moore be heavily sanctioned by the council for her actions. This is yet another example of her self-importance, the same attitude she exhibits in her constant interruptions at council meetings. If there are no consequences for their actions, they will continue. By the way, Ms. Moore, Buren is not solely your community. It belongs to all of us.
Shay McBride, just so we could give Shay a shout out. Shay McBride, love it. Loved every second of it. Thank you, ma'am. But this is this council member, Sydney Moore, is just one of the council members we're going to discuss today that led to me naming the show Council Members Gone Wild, because we can't, and I've seen other examples of these really highly ideological council members who are not there for the benefit of the citizenry at large. They're there to push a particular ideology at any cost and for any reason. And so had she been willing to sit there and say, look, guys, this is a tough situation. These homeless people are here, which you're in King County. How many homeless hotels has Dow Constantine bought? You're telling me you don't have a place to put these people? That's absurd to me. And just further evidence why we shouldn't be spending billions more on this issue until they prove that they can spend the billions they have to good effect. But had she sat there like an adult and said, here's the situation. They're here. We don't have anywhere to put them right now. We don't want businesses to have to be shoveling human feces off their stoops to be able to do business and have people who want to come and visit and shop and spend money. So let's put this, or let's let them into City Hall to use our bathrooms, something like that, and we'll see how that goes. So if she had been able to communicate that as an adult in a position like that on the council, I think that her fellow council members might have been amenable to having that conversation. But instead, she just shouts like a child, and it's completely ridiculous and a really good example of why we're not able to solve the homeless crisis. Because you have people like council member Sydney Moore at every level of government whose crazy ideologies come before just plain common sense. So anyway, thank you to Jonathan Cho for that report. I'm going to talk to Jonathan. I want to, since we have the live show 4 days a week, he has so much good stuff that we just need to amplify when it's out there, because he is on the ground. And I mean, look how many awesome voices he had in his story, business owners, citizens on various sides of the issue. That's what journalism is. So we need to play more of that reporting. But Burian, good luck. As long as you have a council member like Sidney Moore, I don't think you're going to see too much movement on some of these critical issues. All right. We mentioned on the show yesterday, we added a sponsor to the program. And I will say about our sponsors, before you even get into a commercial, they're critical to what we're doing. To be able to have Nicole here full time and to be able to do the show full time. But I also just, oh, wow, somebody just honking outside. Calm down. I also just really care about all the sponsors we have because they're doing and offering really important services to people that I believe in. And MethodWorks is our latest sponsor to the podcast, methodworks.com. And they're out there helping small to mid-sized businesses with technology needs. People don't realize this, but if you haven't started a business, one like data breach can take out your entire business. If it goes bad and you don't have a plan in place. And so whether you have 5 employees or 50 employees, MethodWorks can help with all of your technology needs, getting employees computers they need, helping secure your data and your customer data. And in fact, and this is great, if Nicole, you want to pop their website back up. If you're a small business and you're like, I've been thinking about doing this, right now, they're going to do a month of free security monitoring, free security review. Awesome deal. So check them out, methodworks.com. That's methodworks.com. All right, we're going to continue on with, people were happy we brought back this segment, my favorite Undivided segment. It's called Unbelievable. A council member in Linwood, Washington, that is truly a council member gone wild. I got to show you or talk about, if you're listening on the podcast, the picture that this guy posted on social media. And it's not just, look, I got a little cleave going on today. Nicole's like, do you want to show that much cleavage on the podcast today? Look, I understand, but take it. We'll show our video listeners this picture. Okay, keep it up for a second. If you're listening on the podcast, it's this councilman, his name is Josh Binda, and he's a good-looking younger man, okay? He posts this picture on Instagram, shirtless, and it's this little pose with a tattoo out and all this stuff. And normally I'd be like, fine, do what you want. I don't, you know, it's shirtless, no big deal. I've posted like maybe a bathing suit pic or two way back in the day. Fine, although you are a council member, so, you know, I have some thoughts about that. But here's the other issue with this. Josh Binda posted this picture as as an advertisement for the speeches he gives to children. Okay.
Well, can we be clear? This is not just, you know, a shirtless photo looking at the camera. He's got a pouty mouth. He's looking very seductive.
Is he seducing you, Nicole? Is that seductive to you?
He looks very seductive. And he's got an elbow back, so it's kind of showing his chest, his pec, and his side, you know, the indents from his abs. So It's very seductive. It's not just a topless photo.
Well, okay. For the record, if my fiance is watching, I'm not seduced by it. Nicole's single, so she can be seduced by whatever she wants to be seduced by. But this is a promotional post for speeches he gives to school children. So Josh Binda has been in the news before. So he, on the side, gets paid. He made $12,000 last year giving speeches in public schools, which I think I need to raise my rate for speeches if this guy's making $12,000 in a year. And he got in trouble before from his fellow council members, and there was this investigation into the fact that he shot this promotional video, and it was at part of it at the council chambers. And so he was accused of using his position basically to profit on these speeches. So he's already been on the radar. And back when that happened, what card did he pull? Racism. Because he's black. So he's like, oh, I'm just, you know, they don't like me and it's racist or whatever. But anyway, so back to this picture. So Josh Binda posts this picture, and not only does he post the picture itself, but he has this really egotistical sort of, I mean, it's this very long post where he says, you know, looking back 10 years, I couldn't imagine telling 13-year-old Josh Binda growing up in the projects and getting into trouble that by 23, he'd be an entrepreneur, politician, and now running his own official business, which is great. I'm super happy for him. That's an awesome life story. He goes on to say, last but not least, I truly consider myself a transformative leader of our generation, someone who's meant to shift the culture and create change, da, 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 da. So he really thinks a lot of himself. But again, this is about promoting his speeches to children. And so it is a completely reasonable conversation to ask, is it appropriate for a city council member to post, as Nicole characterizes it, a seductive shirtless photo, to promote giving speeches, motivational speeches to kids? I think that's a very reasonable question to ask of him. But I'll give you one guess. What Josh Binda has to say in response to any criticism, any whisper of criticism, that this is a little provocative of a picture to serve that purpose. Anybody? Anybody? He says it's racist. That this is about him being black and nothing else. When, can you imagine? I guarantee you, Josh Binda, someone will say something about my level of cleavage today. Do I get to say that that's racist or sexist?
Sexist.
If you
yeah.
comment on my amount of cleavage today, not only are you racist, but you're also sexist against me, a white woman, just for the record. That's essentially his argument. So he responded to comments and he had this like whole Instagram thread, I think, or is it TikTok? I don't know what the kids are using these days. He says, I have been silent with all the racism, discrimination, intimidation, and misinformation behind the scenes at the hands of these people that control these media outlets. And he's talking about the Linwood Times. And he says, one specifically, Mario Lotmore, that you see as conservative as he literally ran for Republican Senate. There's no Republican Senate. You could say he ran as a Republican for Senate. As they have made it their mission to tear me down because they see the influence and power I have over the next generation and they don't like it. Are you trying to have power over the next generation? Because that's very odd. Influence, fine. You know, you can share your story and all that. Power is a little bit weird. And then he said at the council meeting, because he spoke about this at Linwood's council meeting after the controversies sort of came out, he said, I think it's easy to sexualize something that was not meant to be sexual at all. And he talked about the sexualization of black men.
Okay, that's hilarious. It's not like he was playing a shirts and skins basketball game and just happened to use that photo. He right. obviously took his shirt off for right. a photo to right. use for this.
Exactly. And then he's like, oh, I don't want any attention or anyone to have any sort of opinion over it at all. He said, the over-sexualization of and fetishization of black people and people of color is real and disgusting. Dude, can you put the picture back up for people on the video? Mm-hmm. You're sexualizing yourself. And I say it again, having been in TV news for 10 years, I can tell you that almost every day someone commented on my appearance, on what I was wearing, on a shirt being cut too low, on a dress being too tight, on heels being too high. And I, like I said, I do have a lot of cleave out today. And so if somebody said something about it, I'd be like, yeah, that's probably a good point. Even Nicole said something. You're like, are you sure that you want to wear that shirt today?
Well, and I will and say, I'm like, on that picture, his tattoo says love conquers, right? So, yeah. And then he makes it love conquers all. He's bringing attention to love, nakedness. I mean, that's what it's meant to do. It's baloney.
Yeah. So anyway, the assertion that it is racist to question whether he should be posting this photo to try to get and book more speeches with children. The idea that that's racist is truly unbelievable. All right, I've been talking on the podcast for some time now about my friends at the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. Speaking of sexualization, I feel like I look pretty good. I feel like, well, not before when I gained 42 pounds during the pandemic. Although, you know, I felt fine. Weight is just a number, but, you know, I wasn't feeling my most confident I was getting a little breathy going upstairs. And then I went to the doctor's office and got weighed. And I was like, oh my God, I gained a lot of weight during the pandemic. So I called the Eastside Weight Loss Clinic back in October. And I'd heard about him on the radio a couple times. And I was like, oh my God, I got to lose this COVID weight. Because after a certain period of time, if you don't lose the COVID weight, I don't think you can call it COVID weight anymore. That's just your weight now. And I didn't want to get to that point. So anyway, I started Eastside Weight Loss Clinic November 6th. And by the new year, I'd lost 32 pounds. So, and I'm really excited because I have a wedding coming up and I would like to feel good in my wedding dress. And so I've been telling people, if you want to cut some weight before summer, there's plenty of time on this program to be able to do that. So give Dr. Ryan Coogan a call, Eastside Weight Loss Clinic. Actually, just visit him. It's easier. Just book a free consultation online. It's 15 minutes. EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. That's EastsideWeightLossClinic.com. Make sure to tell them that you heard about them on the Undivided Podcast with me, Brandy Cruz. Okay, we know that downtown Seattle is just a shadow of what it once was. Not even close. When I first moved to the city, Nicole, how long have we been friends? Maybe like 7, 8 years.
Yeah, probably.
Were you part
probably
of our,
7 years.
Were you part of our crew that used to go out at Kell's Irish Pub? Or is that before we were
that
friends?
That was before me.
Okay, that was like me and Jessam and McIntyre.
Right.
And trouble. We used to go trouble. I mean, we were trouble. We were both single. We were ready to mingle. And we used to go out downtown. We would go out downtown.
I used to go to Kell's too, just not with you. But yes, that was, I mean, Kell's and what was it, J&M, I think. That was the other club we used to go to. We used to go to places downtown.
Right. And that's not, I mean, that's normal. If you live in a big city, you usually go out downtown. And so at the time, I don't remember ever feeling unsafe downtown. We'd go out, we'd go to Kell's, it'd have great live music, and we'd just enjoy it. And that is just getting... I mean, I wouldn't do that now. I would go to dinner downtown. I've been downtown a couple times. You know, I like the Nordstrom's down there still. But there's, first of all, blocks of empty storefronts. So there's just fewer and fewer things to do down there. But I don't feel safe. And I'm not being overdramatic. I mean, talk to some people who have to commute along Third Avenue. I would never be like, Nicole, let's go have drinks downtown. I just wouldn't do it.
I just had some relatives here from Wisconsin, and they went to visit Pike's Place. And she told me afterwards they didn't stay long, and it wasn't really what she expected. And I thought that was sad. That's our place. That's what we're known for. And she did not stay long because it was scary.
And I don't like, we went wedding dress shopping and my mom was in town and we went down and had sushi like kind of by Pike Place, but I didn't take her to walk around, you know, because my fiance would have been livid. Been like, you took your mother to downtown Seattle. You would have been so mad.
Well, on the way there, we saw somebody being rescued on the street.
Yeah, on the way there, I promise I'm getting into a story here, but I'm just ranting about downtown Seattle. Yeah, we're pulling around the corner to go to the sushi place with my mother in town from Fargo, North Dakota. And there's a guy who looks dead. We later found out he was having an overdose and they actually saved his life with Narcan. So it's just embarrassing. So it's not a surprise that the hospitality industry is having some real challenges. And there was this good op-ed you should go read in the Seattle Times that was written by the head of the state's hospitality entity. And the headline, Hospitality Industry Urges Lawmakers to Act on Public Safety. Anthony is the president and CEO of the Washington Hospitality Association. Sorry, I couldn't remember the name of it, but I've interviewed him in the past. And he talks about this rise in property crimes in particular being really, really challenging for people who are part of the tourism ecosystem. And that is a lucrative part of Washington State's economy because we live in a beautiful place. I mean, Seattle, if you can... maybe look at it from 1,000 feet, is an exceptionally beautiful city. But when you get down at street level, not so much. And you got these restaurants and hotels and tourist attractions that are dealing with crime in a very real way. And it's not only impacting their ability to bring people in, but it's impacting their bottom line. So in this op-ed, Anthony writes about how they conducted a survey of their members. They found out that on average per location, so this is like an average restaurant location, average storefront, they spent $10,000, $10,082 in the past year to recover from crime and vandalism. On average per member for the Hospitality Association, more than $10,000 dealing with property crime, vandalism, and other types of crime. Absolutely unacceptable. Absolutely unacceptable. How do you even operate a business like that? And then they also said, as part of this survey, that guests and employees for hospitality businesses were harassed and threatened an average of 258 times per business in the past year. 258 times per business. So that means if you're running a business in downtown Seattle, either your customers or your employees in the hospitality sector were harassed on average. They got 258 complaints about harassment or threatening behavior. That is a startling statistic. And he goes on to say that only one in 21 incidents are actually reported to police. And I've believed this for a long time. We don't even have a clear picture. Although the crime stats are awful, it's a fraction. It is a fraction of the crime that's actually happening. Because people have gotten so fed up waiting for a 911 response, having to wait 8 hours to file a police report, that they're just not reporting it anymore. Because nothing happens anyway. Especially with the vandalism. One in 21 instances, he says, in the hospitality sector, of these things actually being reported to police. And so the point of this op-ed was to tell lawmakers in Olympia that you have to prioritize public safety. I mean, we're well into the legislative session right now, and we've seen really no interest from the majority party to prioritize public safety in a meaningful way. And so I don't know that anything that the hospitality industry wants this session is going to help. But I just don't know, I guess, what the bottom looks like before the majority party says, okay, you're right. We need to fix some of these things. We need to be tougher on criminals. We need to have tougher punishments. We need to enforce the laws that are on the books. We can't de facto legalize substance abuse. I don't know what it's going to take, because I kind of keep over the past couple years being like, okay, this is rock bottom. And then I'm like, okay, no, obviously that wasn't rock bottom. And then a couple months later, okay, this is rock bottom. And then I'm like, wow, it does get worse from here. And I had thought at the beginning of this legislative session that we would, I mean, I was like, obviously they're going to fix, you know, the pursuit law, for instance, and obviously they're going to go back and say, how can we get more officers on our police force? We have the lowest number of officers per capita in the entire country. I was like, obviously. And then no. And then there's still this pushback from them. So I guess I don't get it. And I also would ask Washingtonians, you know, I've said I don't consider myself a Democrat or Republican. I think in Washington state, I align more closely at this moment with the moderate Republican party in the state. And it is moderate comparatively to the national party, because I just think that the Democrats in our state just continue to go hard left and really cater to that uber progressive leftist wing of their party, which is just wild to me. And so I would ask the voters, you know, if you're a Democratic voter, solid, and you're like, I refuse to vote for a Republican, I guess what would it take for you to say, I need to vote for someone else? This isn't working. And I'd really love to hear from you, because I just struggle to understand that. I know political party is important for people on a variety of social issues like abortion, et cetera. But you just take one step in downtown Seattle and things have to change. That's the economic engine of our state, at least it's supposed to be. And if we lose some of this revenue in the tourism industry, I mean, the rest of the state is going to suffer as a result. So I'm glad that the hospitality industry is speaking up for itself. But when you look at those numbers and what their businesses are facing, it's absolutely unacceptable. And every politician in the state should be able and be willing to acknowledge that. Also, a quick follow-up to a story that we discussed yesterday. Como News had this article out. So first, we opened the episode yesterday by talking about, all these elected leaders that want more money for housing. Governor Inslee wants $4 billion. Bruce Harrell wants voters to pass a $970 million property tax levy. The Regional Homelessness Authority wants a 10 times increase in its budget. They want a $12 billion operating budget. And then you have Dow Constantine. He wants $1.25 billion for mental health services. And my whole point yesterday was, you have shown us no proof of performance in no other aspect of our lives. If I go to the coffee shop today and I say, hey, I'll take a almond milk chai latte, which is my normal drink, and I give them my money and then they don't give me the latte, I would never go back. But for some reason, government is the only entity where we will vote to tax ourselves with nothing to show for it. And by we, I mean the Seattle core does a lot of voting to tax itself. And I just wonder, why would you just hand over money like that that you know is absolutely going to be thrown in the trash? And this Como article really just underscored things. And I'm not surprised by the headline. Seattle spent nearly $1 billion on homelessness, but numbers of unsheltered grow. Of course it did. Of course it did. City of Seattle spent $1 billion on homelessness in more than a decade, and the number of unsheltered people continues to rise. There is your proof. All the money we've spent has been squandered. And now you want billions in additional dollars. You want to pass voters to pass these property tax levies. You want them to tax themselves, and you're all of a sudden trying to convince us that you have a solution to an issue that has gotten exponentially worse over the past decade. I am fine spending more money if I know that what we're spending it on is proven to work. And to me, that should be a non-controversial, non-political opinion. This is our, I think we need to get back to looking at tax money like our money. I think it's like easy. It's like it comes out of your paycheck and it's just out of sight, out of mind. But you still need that accountability there. And remember, no other part of our lives would we throw money at something without any expectation of something in return or some sort of outcome for that money. But we do it here. And so I think that, yes, we're going to need money to dig ourselves out of this crisis because it's gotten so bad. But what they need to do is spend 2 years, implementing some sort of action plan. They have the money to do it. And then if at the end of 2 years you see positive results from that, then we'll scale it up. You come to us and you say, hey, this is what we did over the last 2 years. We've actually seen a positive outcome. The rest of us see it on the streets. And then come to us and say, hey, let's scale it up. We need more money. What do you say? Then I would be all on board. Because it's a societal good if we can fund a solution that actually works. But why on God's green earth would anyone throw money at a government that has proven incapable of solving this crisis? It's absolutely insane. And then the Department of Housing and Urban Development came out and said Washington State ranks second in the country for the most unhoused people per capita. Second in the country per capita. So there's no excuse for this. We are at the bottom of the barrel as far as this issue is concerned. All right, should we talk about Trump for a moment? Let's talk about Trump.
I suppose you have to.
This isn't meant to be a CNN competitor, and so we try not to dive too much into stories that every single other entity in the world is covering. But there's a couple things on this, and I've been clear, I don't particularly like Donald Trump. I kind of just wish he would have retired peacefully at Mar-a-Lago, and then Ron DeSantis runs his campaign and maybe chooses Nikki Haley as a running mate or something. But anyway, so Trump went to Manhattan, turned himself in as we knew he was going to, was technically arrested, although I don't know the extent to which that felt like an arrest for him. And then he pled not guilty. This is related to hush money payments allegedly sent to Stormy Daniels and how they were categorized as a business expense, etc. So anyway, it was a circus outside. We mentioned earlier, John Curley, radio host in Seattle, dear friend of Nicole and I's, was there for an auction. And of course, John Curley went down there. Did he tell you kind of what he saw?
Not a lot. He just said he was trying to stay back a little bit, which I was actually surprised about because normally John wants to get in on the action, right? But he was waiting for Trump and then he had to go and Trump showed up right after him. But no, I think that I saw some other social media posts where there was some chaos laying on flags. It looked like there was more Trump support than there was excitement about him being there. Did you see that?
Yeah. And I don't want him to run for president again, but I don't think this has the outcome that some Democrats are hoping for, that it ruins his chances of ever running again. Now, I don't know, if he goes to prison, clearly you can't be the president in prison. So I think there's a lot that remains to be seen about what the actual legal implications are for a bid for the presidency. But one, I think he rakes in a ton of money over this. I'm sure he already is raking in a ton of donations over this. And I think it galvanizes his base. I think it makes a martyr out of him. And I don't believe anyone's above the law. I've been very clear on that, and I'll be consistent. I don't care who you are. I don't care if you're the president of the United States. I don't care who you are. I'm not going to sit here and preach that we need to throw the book at people who are repeatedly committing crimes and then say, oh, but Trump gets off the hook. So if they've got evidence against this guy that he did something wrong, fine. But I think there's a question about, are they amplifying it because of who he is and what he stands for? And is it in the best interest of the country, which I don't think it is. So that's where I'm at on this issue. But I got to say, Marjorie Taylor Greene, Interesting woman. So she was doing, it looked like this news network, which I looked it up because I'd never heard of it, Right Side Broadcasting Network. They were doing live coverage of Trump, you know, turning himself in. And I think they were riding in a vehicle with Marjorie Taylor Greene when she talked about the persecution of Donald Trump. And this is a doozy. Go ahead.
President Trump is joining some of the most incredible people in history being arrested today. Nelson Mandela was arrested, served time in prison. Jesus was arrested and murdered by the Roman government. There have been many people throughout history that have been arrested and persecuted by radical, corrupt governments. And it's beginning today in New York City. And I just can't believe it's happening, but I'll always support him. He's done nothing wrong.
Nelson Mandela and our Savior Jesus Christ. I am going to take great umbrage with the bundling of Donald Trump into our Savior Jesus Christ's sacrifices and persecution.
Especially for this specific thing.
Right, we're talking about.
I also don't understand the excitement about it because he is a president. It's embarrassing for the country. It's all of those things, and everybody's, you know, having parties about the Trump indictment. I don't understand that either.
No, people are unhinged over Trump. Always said there are two types of Trump derangement syndrome, because the left uses it for people who are like, you know, MAGA all day, like everything. There is a Trump, or no, the right uses it for people on the left who are like meltdown over Trump. I think there's two types of Trump derangement syndrome. Either like you live or breathe by this man, or you feel like his mere existence is a threat to your being. Mm-hmm. And it's like, you gotta just let go. I'm not saying, you know, do what you want, but it's like, just take a breath. It's just one man. So we'll see what happens with Donald Trump. I'm not trying to gloss over it like it's not a big story or a big deal, but, you know, that's not what this show is about. I do think that this is just continuing the divides in our country, but I also believe that there are an awful lot of us, right, left, and center, who are kind of over it, ready to move on to other things. And maybe we just let those corners of society kind of duke it out over Donald Trump while this plays down. Okay, I'm going to take some of your comments and questions from the live stream. Let's see. Weisscastle says, you've not shown any religious interested. I don't know what that means. Okay. The Lechners say, I wouldn't equate him to those people in history. Yes, that's very true. I think that is just a silly thing. I've never seen that before. Aaron is commenting on John Curley. We're talking about John Curley's trip to New York. John is such a great guy. You need to get him next. I've never come across a more humble, genuine person with celebrity who cares deeply about others. Yeah, John is an awesome guy. He's just really, really, really caring. And he's so interested. Okay. Let me see. Nicole, feel free to read some good ones that you see. Rachel said, pretty good for the second day, team. Thanks. Sorry for the delayed start.
And the traffic chaos outside the door.
Sue said, there's plenty of housing available. What's the solution for those who say no? Those who say no after being offered should not be allowed to camp out in cities. And technically, you can move them then. So with the federal court ruling, they don't have to say yes. But if you've said, hey, you can't camp there, we have a shelter space for you today, and they say no, then you can move them. The issue is you can't move them if then you say, we don't have any shelter space, but you can't stay here. So yeah, they should be able to, if they've offered them something, move them. The Lechners say, I need to open a porta potty business. Yeah, yeah, you could probably make money. I do think porta potties are a very lucrative business. When we go to Watershed every August, they're just making money hand over fist there.
Oh yeah.
Those honey buckets. Let's see.
Becky says when their lives are affected in a way that is traumatic is when they'll change their mind. So I think she's referring to the city and homelessness and how they're going to actually find a solution.
Yeah, it does seem like it has to be a personal impact to you for these lawmakers to truly care about public safety. It's not enough for them to see thousands of people signing up for public testimony to say, I don't feel safe. Then they just dismiss it as, oh, you're just emotional, or, oh, you're just feeding into right-wing narratives. It's like, can't you just look at someone and say, maybe I don't agree with them politically, but they're telling me they're scared for themselves and the safety of their families. They're telling me their business is suffering. And I, as someone who wanted a job that serves the public, should listen to them without being condescending. Who would have thought? Okay, let me see here. Scrap Iron says, thank you for getting super chats up. You all are a breath of fresh air from the staleness of media. Cheers. Yeah, I'm new to super chats. So I'm supposed to, Janelle Viegas says, very happy to give you one of your first super chats. So glad to hear you and Nicole again. My hope is some of Dory's legacy will be heard here. I need to hear the truth of what's going on in this region. Much love, Brandy. Thank you, Janelle. Yeah, I didn't really know what super chats was. Although when I was on the Timcast with Tim Pool, they were using that. And it was funny because people who hate Tim Pool would pay a little money to do a super chat just so he would read like their hate toward him. So, I mean, honestly, if you're going to send us cash to say something mean, I'll read it.
For sure.
For sure. I'll make Nicole read it.
Show content.
And maybe Daryl will tell me. Daryl, is there somewhere where I see all the super chats? So I want to make sure I don't miss one. Oh, I think they're just kind of highlighted. Larry Olson. The live shows are awesome. Love supporting such a refreshing take on politics and our region. Thank you. Thank you, Larry. And we're going a little late today because we started a little late. Let me see here. Weiss Castle says, my family is four generations of preachers and Christians. Jesus don't mind the comparison. I haven't talked to Jesus about it, so I don't know if he'd mind the comparison. Let me see. Charles says, voice of the people. Are you talking about me or Donald Trump or Nicole? I don't know. Let me see here.
Jill says on Facebook, I believe that rock bottom is now, but we moderates are vilified with every comment or action, easily labeled racist or a Trump lover, leaving us absolutely no ability to enact solutions.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think moderates, it is the hardest place to be politically. And I was told once that the moderate caucus in Olympia, when it existed, moderates were called the roadkill caucus. Because there's nothing in the middle of the road but roadkill. And that's how it feels a lot because, you know, and I've experienced this with the podcast. I've lost a ton of subscribers on certain days where I do a story that is like, I did a story this like a year ago, something about Trump. And I lost a ton of subscribers over it. And so it's hard to be in the middle because people don't, they like, people want you to choose a side. And when you don't choose a side, it can confuse people or they take it personally. And I'm not saying you guys, I mean, you guys know me enough, well enough by now. And then, so from a financial perspective, when you're trying to build a business, it's like being a moderate and trying to do a podcast as a moderate, like it would be way more lucrative if I just picked a side and went all in on like the rage machine, but it's against everything I stand for. And so I just have to deal with, I have to stay the course and deal with the ebb and flow in subscribers for people who are going to cancel if I do say something they disagree with, which is totally your right.
And the you don't goal have is to build
yeah,
the bait.
Yeah, I mean, you don't have to financially support a show that, you know, said something that you don't agree with. That's totally up to you how you spend your money. But I always tell people when I'm trying to get them to subscribe that you'll probably agree with me like half the time. And so as long as you're prepared for that, like you probably agree with me about half the time. And I think that's fine. I don't know anybody who I agree with 100% of the time. And that's just sort of, I mean, you and I, Nicole, I would say that we're not lockstep politically.
Not always.
Not always. Okay. Lisa said, our city council in Spokane is out of control. Four of them are ridiculously bleeding hearts for Camp Hope and the last occupants. Yeah, Spokane, that's been interesting to watch Spokane deal with some of the homeless issues. Because if you're not familiar with Camp Hope, at the time that it was like at its peak, it was like the largest homeless camp in the state. And you would think that sounds very contrary because it's in Spokane, which is more of a Republican area. They have a Republican mayor, but the camp was on state property. So you had this camp that the mayor of Spokane would have absolutely taken care of, but she couldn't. She had no jurisdiction. And so it was this interesting little like pocket of Seattle politics over in Spokane. What a mess that was. Okay. Teresa said, I appreciate your middle of the road opinion. I don't always agree, but respect your opinion on things. Thank you, Teresa. And I try to respect your guys' opinions on things. And I know there, for instance, are a lot of Trump fans who watch the show. And I, like, to me, I never got the like outright vilification of people who support a politician. Like, I don't know your life. I don't know the life you've lived. I don't know the issues that you're prioritizing. And we have to get to a place where you can disagree over politics or a politician without demeaning people and talking down to people. And that's what we try to do on the podcast. You got one, Nicole?
Yeah, Fawn Spady of the Spady, Spady family from Dicksburger says, stay the course, choose solutions, not sides.
Fawn's awesome. And the whole family over there at Dick's Drive-Ins is awesome. And you guys like do so much work in the community too. And so A+. You guys are A+. I love Fawn. Okay, let me get a couple. Brandy, you're our sane voice. I appreciate that. Black Blues says 60% of the time, I agree with you every time. Good. I love it. Okay. I think that we got a lot in. Military Reunion Network says, Brandy, I work with military reunions across the country. Each year I do a survey. I asked about media coverage of cities impacting reunion city selection. I'm assuming that you wouldn't do one of those reunions in Seattle. That would be my guess. NWAV8R says, you and Nicole are the part of Dory's legacy. Love you guys and am super blessed to have you both around still. You have a lot of fans, Nicole. People are so stoked to hear your voice again.
Yeah. Well, it's glad to be speaking again. I'm glad to be speaking again. It's great to be speaking again.
Yeah, it's nice to have you here.
I missed everybody. I did miss everybody.
Yeah, I got a lot of nice comments. Okay, thank you for your comments. As always, you can watch the show. You can comment on Patreon or Locals. You can comment on the YouTube chat or in the Facebook stream. Thank you for your patience. We're going to do a closing sanity check in a moment, but thank you for your patience today. We're still, you know, I think by the end of the week, we'll be complete experts on this. But yes, the show
we can only hope
will, in theory, start exactly at noon every day. So I appreciate your patience on that. Mello said, not sure what all the cleavage talk is about. All I see is a microphone. See, this wasn't worth the watching and driving. Oh, don't watch and drive.
Don't watch and drive. But I noticed that too. Your mic is very well placed today.
Ah, okay, good. Mm-hmm. See, I'm just, you know, sending out thirsty traps out there. let's see. Jason said on Patreon, I wanted to get into Patreon to read some comments. I've enjoyed every last one of your podcasts, but these noon live streams are amazing. Your no BS approach to bringing back common sense gives me an amazing sense of hope. Love it. And I'm thankful you're growing your audience even more. Thank you, Brandy and Nicole. Yes, thank you so much. Mm-hmm. And then I can read the rest of that comment about military reunions. The question on the survey was, do news reports in various cities across the country influence your decision to hold a reunion there? Follow-up was, what cities would you least likely consider? And she said she's happy to chat about the findings of both. I would love to hear the findings of both, Sharon. I got your email there, but maybe send me a message, DM on Patreon since you're on there. Okay, we will close the show, as we're going to close every live show, with a brief but important sanity check. There is a story out of the University of Pennsylvania. During COVID-19, the University of Pennsylvania suspended its dean's list. So you know what a dean's list is? Dean list is you do good, you do well, you meet certain thresholds that they put in place for your academic achievement, and you make the dean's list. And it's a great accomplishment. You could tell your family, hey, it's a good thing you're spending $40,000 a year on my education because I made the dean's list. And then they cannot feel so bad about the level of student debt that they have. But also, it looks good when you go to apply for jobs to say, hey, I had a really consistently good academic achievement. I was on the dean's list. And again, competition is healthy. Striving to meet or reach a goal is healthy. And it's particularly good for our young people. So there is now an update to the University of Pennsylvania saying that it is going to cease recognizing students' academic achievements on the dean's list. This is from thecollegefix.com. Beginning July 1st, UPenn no longer going to have a dean's list at all. So they suspended it during COVID. They're not going to bring it back. And I thought what was interesting is there was even some students there during COVID that said, why would you suspend the dean's list just because COVID is going on? There are some of us who continue to work very hard, even under difficult circumstances, to do well. They signed a petition, 250 students at the time, saying the removal of the dean's list for the 2019-2020 academic year would be a great disappointment to Penn students who have dedicated efforts to their academics in these difficult times. And the same is true moving forward. And I think this speaks to a lot of what's happening in our country and why we need to get back to a place of sanity and common sense. I think we're raising a generation of wusses. I think we're raising a generation of people who simply can't cope, who don't want to know whether someone is doing better than them academically, who don't want to be compared to another student, who are taught to believe that math is racist and 2 + 2 might not actually equal 4 and it's all just subjective. It's not subjective. Either you're doing well in school, you're doing well on your assignments, you're doing well on your tests academically, or you're not. And removing that distinction for students who are working hard every single day to further their education is just plain insane. All right, that's it for today's episode of Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. Thank you to subscribers to the show on Patreon and locals who help support our mission and our movement to give Common Sense a comeback. If you would like to find out more about how you can watch the show, how you can listen to the show, how you can subscribe to support the show, just go to undividedpod.com. That's undividedpod.com. And hey, while you're at it, if you've got a news tip or something you want us to track down, there is a contact form on the page where you can send us a nice old email. And even if you just want to say something nice to us, we will absolutely read it. All right, I will see all of you tomorrow at noon.